your eyes to the skies. It's time for Spaced Out on 95 BFM, thanks to the Stardome Observatory and Planetarium.
Good afternoon, David Britton from the Stardome Observatory and Planetarium.
Hi.
How are you? Can you hear us okay?
Yeah, I can hear you now, yep.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
good.
Happy New Year.
Right on. Right back at you, mate. Right back at you.
Thanks.
Now, the last couple of weeks have been just space bonanza. There's been so much space news.
Would you not say space-tastic?
Yeah, it's always the way we go on holiday and everything happens.
Oh, it was crazy. I just was watching all these news stories unfold over my holiday. I was like, oh, my God.
How about we start with the most recent thing that we saw in the sky?
The alien spacecraft?
That's the one. Is that the one you got off?
Yes, actually. The green one streaking across the sky.
Yeah, no, if you're watching the cricket on Saturday, you would have seen this fiery whatever going across the sky, which Ian Smith announced was a meteor shower, which, of course, it wasn't. It was actually a Russian military satellite that was burning up.
That's a case of the old stay in your lane. You're a sports reporter. Do the sports. Don't report on the sky. Sort of thing.
Exactly. Yeah, he probably had someone whisper it in his ear, because in fact there was a meteor shower on at that time.
Right.
It's been going for a few weeks and it ended that weekend. But really we can't see much of it. It's really a Northern Hemisphere event. But when you saw what happened on Sky Sport through their cameras, you could see it was a spacecraft breaking up. Just the way it breaks up into smaller pieces, and at the end there was a large piece that was tumbling. You could see it flashing regularly as it was turning around. Looking up the databases on satellites and so on, it turned out to be an early warning satellite. So the Russians sent up a number of these to look out for missile launches from hostile countries. And because you want to be seeing the whole Northern Hemisphere as much as possible for as long as possible, it's on a very elongated orbit. So it comes down close near New Zealand, lower near the atmosphere, and then goes zooming up to about over 3,000 kilometres.
Most things that kind of seem to sweep by us are on some sort of elliptical, sort of egg-shaped orbit, eh?
That's right, and this is quite an egg-shaped orbit.
Right,
and
it's
the closest approach in that orbit was just east of New Zealand. So that's where it was getting most of the atmospheric drag. It was launched in 2007.
Right. Is that to do with our gravity mucking around with it a bit? No.
It's because they wanted it to spend its time in the slow part of its orbit looking on the Northern Hemisphere.
Ah, I see.
So it's a tilted orbit.
Cool.
Where the close approach was in the Southern Hemisphere near us, and the high part was above the Northern Hemisphere. So they could look for missile launches from alien, from hostile countries.
Ah, very interesting, very interesting.
So, 2012, they'd lost control of it, basically, and it's been, the orbit's been decaying ever since, but when it gets close to the atmosphere, it happens pretty quickly, but it's, because it's not controlled, they don't know exactly when it's going to happen.
Mm.
And basically, it happened about one orbit later than they predicted.
That's nice of them to make it out of a material that makes a nice green light when it burns up. I thought that was a nice touch.
Yeah, I'm sure that's
Do the Americans have like a red, white, and blue scenario?
Yeah, it's just the different alloys and the metals that they use to build those spacecraft, because they have to be built for a very hostile environment out in space.
Cosmic.
Would any of it have hit Earth or made it down to the sea or the ocean or the land?
It would have been in the ocean, yeah. When it came from a northwest towards the southeast. So the game, the cricket game, was in Tauranga, and you could see the camera was pointing out over the ocean, so it would have deposited any final big piece. The big pieces tend to last the longest and go the furthest, of course.
Did the cricket kind of carry on, or did everyone kind of stop and go,
I carried on, but people went, as well. Very multitasking.
Everyone's like, oh, shit, yeah, people, finally, they got it. They got cricket. No, it was a meteor thing, but that isn't a meteor. It's actually a Russian.
He really knocked that for a six, didn't he?
Yeah, all was said.
Hey, now, is this the biggest news?
China.
China have landed on the far side of the moon.
You wouldn't have thought so by watching the our news coverage of it, but I think it was a really big deal.
It absolutely is. The thing is, was over shadowed by the New Horizons flyby of the asteroid.
Right. Was that on purpose?
Not.
You can't plan that in.
Just the way things worked out. But yeah, this is the first craft to soft land on the far side of the moon. Which that China has ambitions about getting to the moon and Mars and so on. So to help them on their way, they're taking a leaf out of the Russian and American books of doing something that gets headlines and doing something for the first time. They've not just landed, but it's got a rover which went onto the surface and it's roving around.
Because there's basically one side of the moon that's facing us the whole time as we're spinning around this massive black void. Eh?
The far side of the moon, we can never see it because the Earth's gravity holds the moon in place facing us.
Bazzy.
So we always see the same face of the moon as it goes around the Earth.
It doesn't move at all.
That's right.
Fuck, that's weird.
It's tidally locked.
Now,
how flat is the Earth?
Is it the first time that we've landed something on the moon since the 70s?
Well, now it's we. It wasn't we when they were reporting it in the news. It felt real like they.
It's the first soft landing since back then, yes. There've been other landings, but there have been crashes of spacecraft that have been orbiting and then they've been deorbited to get them out of the way.
What?
We've been crashing things into the moon? Did you just say that?
Yep.
Oh, my goodness.
We are so rank.
Now, the thing is, if you leave a satellite in orbit around the moon, that endangers other craft or people who go there.
Okay, so you need to crash
it. Protocol when your mission is finished,
can't you orbit it
and crash it into the moon.
Can't you just fire it off in a certain direction, like away from everything? Or is that even worse? It's best to crash it into the moon.
Well, they don't have enough fuel.
I see.
Okay. Yeah, so they only take enough fuel to get there, and then enough fuel to just degrade the orbit and it spirals down.
So you're saying the moon is, since about the late 60s, the moon is not in mint condition at all. We've got all sorts of crap up there.
Not soft landings. Yeah.
Well, that's crazy.
Now, it doesn't surprise me.
I tell one lie. Sorry, I tell a lie. The Chinese did do a soft landing on the outside of the moon a couple of years ago. And that was like a dress rehearsal for this mission.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was Chang'e, and U2 was, Y-U-T-U, was the little rover.
Mm-hmm.
What we're seeing now is Chang'e 4 and U2 2.
Oh, I'm not going to even ask about Chang'e 2 and 3. Sounds grim.
Well, those were the steps along the way.
Yeah.
The thing is, being on the far side of the moon, you can't communicate directly with that
rover.
Yes,
I remember when the Yanks went up there the first time, it was like, we're going to lose you for a bit as you spin around the thing. Or maybe that was a movie, but probably accurate.
Yeah, so what the Chinese did is they sent a satellite up beyond the moon, and that's parked out beyond the moon.
Oh, triangulating the signal?
Yeah, it relays the signal to Earth because you can't directly send a radio signal to the far side.
Right on.
Yeah.
Oh, it's rad. It's good stuff.
Yeah.
Now, what else? Of course, you were saying it's New Horizons. Ultima Thule has reappeared in the news.
As apparently it's pronounced Thule. I've been corrected on that. It's meant to be Thule or Thule. It was passed. What they've released at this stage is something that looks like a snowman. Got a small, round head and a larger around the body. So what they're pretty sure they are two separate asteroids that slowly joined together way back when the solar system first formed over 4 billion years ago. So they didn't collide, they just gradually came together and became one. Now they're not showing any more images, but at the moment they're not downloading any data. The sun has got in the way, so the radio signal from the spacecraft can't get to us because of the radio interference from the sun. So it won't be for a couple of weeks before they start downloading more data, and then we'll start getting into the good stuff with the real close-up images and so on. So everyone's really hanging out for that. So hopefully next time we talk, there might be another image that's a bit closer for us to talk about.
Nice one.
Sweet. Okay. Well, we'll wait with bated breath.
Now, Stewart Island, tell us a little bit about that. We've got what's a dark sky sanctuary?
A dark sky sanctuary. This is a designation from the International Dark Sky Association.
Oh, my God. Sweet name for an association, by the way.
Yeah, the IDA. They have a number of different types of dark sky places. There's communities, parks, reserves, sanctuaries.
Sort of anti-light pollution.
That's part of it. A sanctuary is for a place where that is threatened by... Its situation is possibly threatened. It's delicate balance as far as its environment goes, but it has a really dark site, and usually these are the darkest places around the world.
Okay.
There are only five at the moment, and two of them are islands. In fact, both of those are in New Zealand. The first one was Great Barrier Island, which was a designated dark sky sanctuary early last year.
What? Right.
And now Stewart Island has got it. So
how do we
in the world are in the US and in Chile. So it's different to Mount Cook, Araki, which is the Mackenzie one. That's a dark sky reserve. It's a different designation with different criteria.
Right, right. Is it? And so what's the story here? Like, how do you maintain a dark sky sanctuary?
You don't. That's the thing. Because of its isolation, it's just making sure everyone's aware of the delicate nature of that sort of environment. Because it's remote, it's unlikely to be suddenly have a city built next to it, which, you know, Great Barrier is not going to have. Although I know some people are a bit worried about north of Auckland, some of the urban spread up there, they're getting a little bit worried that that might impact the skies over at Great Barrier, which is, what, 25 k's away.
Wow.
Even that hasn't seemed to protect them. But in Stewart Island, they seem pretty sure that shouldn't be a problem. What you don't want to happen, I mean, it's going to be a tourist magnet. People like going to these places. What you don't want is infrastructure to start being built that then starts putting light up in the sky. So right. It doesn't come with any laws that you can't put lights out or anything like that. It's really just making everyone aware of the nature of such a beautiful site.
Yeah, totally. Embarrassingly, I'm going to admit something right now. Never been to Great Barrier Island. There, I said it.
Oh, well, neither have I.
2019. Well, maybe we should plan a trip.
It's a difficult place to get to.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, it's got to be worth it. I've heard the Pūtakawa was spectacular also.
The BFM spaced out Great Barrier Skygazing Expedition.
I don't want to say road trip. I'll say something else.
Ferry road. Oh, we could fly over in a seaplane.
Something way more gnarly.
Yeah, you either go on a plane or you can go on the ferry, which is an adventure if the seas are a bit swelly.
Mm. Certainly is. Now, David, what is happening at the Stardome? Because school holidays are still on.
It is school holidays. At the moment, we've got daytime shows. So the school holiday program doesn't start till next week. So at the moment we've got four shows a day at 10, 11, 1 and 2, different shows for each time. So these are our summer shows. So that's this week. It's $10 and $12 for those. And then next week and the week after is the school holiday program. We're focusing on dinosaurs for that. So the show is called Dinosaurs at Dusk. We start off in the space room with activities and crafts. Rocket launching outside, and then the planetarium show Dinosaurs at Dusk to finish off. So that's our holiday program, which starts next week for 2 weeks. You need to book for those. They're always in high demand. That's $10 for adults and $12 for children. And this week, as I said, the daytime shows, there's four shows each day.
Nice one.
Very nice.
Hey, well, David, it's been wonderful to catch up. And we trust you had a wonderful holiday.
It was a relaxing holiday. I wasn't too adventurous this time.
Oh, that's so good.
Have you got a really gnarly telescope at home? Do you just like gaze it up in your downtime?
No, I don't.
So you just go...
He's got a giant one. He's got the biggest one at work.
I'm an armchair astronomer.
Very nice. Very nice. Aren't we all?
Yeah, no, I've got a big telescope at Stardome, of course.
Right on.
Yeah.
Sweet, mate. Hey, we'll catch you in a fortnight.
Look forward to it.
Easy. Thank you very much.
See you later.
Bye. Control, We are docked. That was Spaced Out on 95 BFM, thanks to the Stardome Observatory and Planetarium.
Oh, actually, you've just reminded me, Big Hungry.
No news, so we can play Space.